All right, so Mr. Chris Bowler reached out to me via, I don't know, email or direct message. Basically, he wants to know how the sausage is made here at the Enough Millimac podcast. I mean, you know, because a lot of the steps of the process, just like making sausage, they're kind of ugly, and you don't want to really see it, I would imagine. But, I mean, you do podcasts all the time, and one of the things I do know is that at least for the recording aspects of things, we are using a lot of tools that are built right into the Mac. There's no special software being used here. I know that while I'm using this big, heavy, mammoth, less than minimal microphone, that you don't have to use that, that there are other options available. And I don't know. I think in general, it might be nice to talk to people about basically how to make a podcast using your Mac and using the most built-in tools available. So,
yeah, this, what do you think? This could be quite a big one, depending on how much you want to go into it. Let's talk about the equipment and stuff first. Now, when me and Terry, who's my co-host on the Bro Show, when we started with the first few episodes, we were using some crappy Logitech headsets. We got a couple of them off Amazon because. What I would suggest to anybody, this is my top tip, actually. If you're going to think about starting a podcast, don't spend too much money on it to start with, and don't start using something like Logic or anything crazy like that. Don't make it too difficult for yourself, because if you make it too hard, you'll just stop doing it. Because when you first release a podcast, nobody will listen. So you've got to make it as friction-free as possible.
Yeah.
And for as little money as possible. So, I mean, for example, sometimes on the Bro Show, when Terry can't make it down, he will record over Skype with me recording on my iMac, and he'll be using his iPhone with the iPhone mic, which is surprisingly good quality.
Oh, really? So like you're talking about the mic on the headset, or the mic built into the mic on the headset?
Yeah, and we do it the mic on the headset, but you could do either, because the iPhone 4, for example, has noise cancellation built into it. Because of the two microphones.
Oh, nice. Okay, so, right.
It isn't, you don't both have to be in the same place, because both being in the same place using two headsets can cause echo, which is something that we had a problem with as well, because of the latency between them, because we have a USB. Most people listening to this will have the tools already necessary to start recording a podcast anyway. I mean, you could use the internal microphone in your Mac. It's not going to sound great, but it's not really going to matter for the first couple.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So one of the reasons why I wanted to, believe it or not, the first few episodes that I recorded with you guys of the Bro Show, I just used the built-in microphone on my Mac. Over Skype. I didn't have iPhone headphones plugged in or anything like that. You know, it was coming through the built-in mic. And while it wasn't ideal, it worked.
It's an option.
It's an option. And I would say that, you know, that's your first, obviously least expensive and easiest option, but this probably the one that you want to upgrade from the quickest.
Yeah.
because it's not ideal. I think the iPhone headphones, if you've got those, that seems like a decent option. Let me tell you, I wrote a little bit about this on Minimal Mac on the site, but by the way, we should explain that that Mike does another show, if you're not familiar with it, called The Bro Show. I've appeared on it a few times, and he does that with his mate Terry, and it's a fantastic show.
Thank you.
All should be subscribing to that as well. Last episode had a highly interesting discussion about the Mac App Store with a gentleman from Real Mac Software. That was just fascinating. I just got done listening to it.
In any case,
I digress. Subscribe to that. But, you know, I felt that, you know, since you mentioned, well, since, well, since you mentioned it, I felt I had to kind of explain to folks who may not be familiar.
Thank you, sir.
I digress. Back to the thing at hand. So I knew if I was going to be taking this seriously, I wanted to get a serious microphone for the job. I didn't want to monkey around with the built-in tools if it was going to sound good and be professional and be on the iTunes store and all of that such. So there's a reason why I chose the microphone I did, which is the Blue. I don't know if it's Blue Electronics or Blue Audio or whatever. It's called the Yeti, and I'll link to it in the show notes. But it's a mammoth microphone. Yep. This thing is huge. It's 3.5 pounds. It's solid aluminum. It's built like a tank. The reviews I saw of it were just fantastic, and getting feedback from a lot of other podcasters, they said, "Hey, no, this is the mic I use."
Definitely, this is what I use.
There you go, and so, but I mean, even still, there were other minimal solutions. Blue makes another microphone called the Snowflake, which is kind of a more portable thing, and it also, from all the reviews and all the feedback I got, is decent enough, and I think it's only like $40, and it sounds great. The Blue Yeti is like around $100, but it's very worth it. The reason I bought the Blue Yeti was mainly based on feedback from lots of other sources.
It's great for not just podcast recording, because it has sort of four settings. So yes. I believe it has two microphones inside, and they're omnidirectional microphones. There's three. Yeah. So I think it's three. So you can record, you can put one in the middle of a table, and everyone's sitting around the table will pick it all up. It actually does a really good job of doing that as well.
Interesting. I haven't tried that.
When me and Terrence are in the same room, we will both talk into the same microphone. No.
Oh, nice. So do you set it up like in the middle of, you sit across the table from each other or something like that?
We sit side by side, and it just sits in between the middle of us.
Okay.
And one of them, it sort of has a cone, like a sort of cone of audio that it would pick up to the front and out to both sides, and we just sit like that, and it does quite a good job of that.
Nice. All right. So we should talk a little bit about the software that we're using.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we've said enough on microphones. Bottom line is get as good a one as you can afford. But I think Mike made an excellent point, which is, unless you're certain that, hey, this is something that I want to do and take seriously and professionally or whatever, you can get away with just using some tools you probably already have at hand.
Mm-hmm.
for the first several episodes and get good results. So on the software end of things, we're actually doing something that is kind of come to be called in the podcast recording business, double-ended recording.
I love that. Just push it off every time.
That's what it's called, right? Yeah, it's a double-ender, right? And basically what that means is that while we are talking over Skype, we are each recording our own individual voices on our Macs.
Mm-hmm.
And we are both using QuickTime 10, QuickTime X. I'm not sure what they're calling it. It's the one that comes with 10.6. And it's got some really great built-in features, and one of them is a very simple, straight from the file menu audio recording.
Yep.
And so I record my end on this side to my Mac. Mike records his end using the same on his end. And even though we can hear each other and have a conversation over Skype, we're not actually using Skype to record.
We're not recording our
Skype conversation, even though Mike does anyway. But he does that as a backup.
Yep.
What we're actually using in the production of the podcast is these two separate single voice recordings done in QuickTime on either end.
I mean, the benefit of that is just pure audio goodness, really. I mean, you're lucky in a way, and you don't have to do this, and we don't do it on the Bro Show either, because typically maybe one of us is away, and also because we have guests on quite frequently. But sometimes consider it a bit unfair to ask a guest to go through that amount of work.
Noted, yeah.
So, but if you're thinking about podcasting, you're lucky in a way that probably the two heavyweights in tech podcasting, being Leo Laporte and Dan Benjamin, don't do this on their shows. They record everything through Skype. Now, admittedly, they're using audio mixers so they can adjust the levels. But I mean, sometimes if you listen to Twit, and this week's Twit is an example, sometimes they have people with really poor connections. But we're used to listening to it. So it's not necessarily a problem to record over Skype. And if you're going to record over Skype, I use a product called the eCam. I think it's ECAMM Skype call recorder. If you just Google Skype call recorder, it's always the first one that comes up. It's really lightweight, and it comes with some great tools. It will allow you to split the two conversations into two separate tracks, so you can adjust the levels if necessary.
Oh, that's a neat feature.
Yeah, and it also does the same with video as well. It will record video, and it will let you separate the video into two different tracks also.
And as I remember, it's pretty cheap too.
Yeah, it's not that much at all, and it comes with a free trial. I think it's like $15, $20, something like that. And it works really, really well. And it's just a bolt-on to Skype. So when you open Skype, just this additional recording window comes up, and it has sort of input and output audio levels as well, nice. Sort of real-time. So that's what I use on that. But, yeah, the double-ending recording is good because it just allows for sort of more control, but it does mean more editing. Again, so if... starting off doing something like this, a double-ended recording, if it's a heavily edited show, it will require a lot of work because you're simultaneously recording, simultaneously editing two pieces of audio that have to match, and no matter how hard you try, you'll never both press record at the same time. So you'll need to be matching up the audio files and then ensuring that they're edited correctly if you're cutting out chunks of sound. So, again, it's still not something, if you're just doing it for a hobby, I wouldn't necessarily suggest it straight away.
So, okay. Well, this brings us to the next step in the process, which is, so I've got my recording, which I then, you know, save and name and get to you.
Mm-hmm.
We happen to use Dropbox for that, but, we could just as well use any service, you know, for me to just get it to you.
It's cheap and free and... ridiculously fast and easy. So,
well, yeah, we love Dropbox.
Yeah,
but the so you get it, and do I understand this right? Because this is great because this is the part of the process that I have no control over. As soon as I am finished with my end of the recording, my job is done.
Yep.
The rest of it is in poor Mike's hands.
And this is how I got Pat to agree to it. I promised him he'd never have to touch it. Just you just record, you just come along, talk to me, and then I'll take care of everything else.
And it's a perfect arrangement. I couldn't be happier with it. So I give it to you, and then what? What do you do?
So we typically record on the Tuesday, and we'll do a couple of episodes. So
Sometimes
I'll do it on the Tuesday night, sometimes I'll do it on a Wednesday. But what I'll do is I'll bring our recordings and I use GarageBand simply because it comes with the Mac and it's free and it will do 95% of what you need it to do. There are programs like Sound Studio, which I've been playing around with a bit recently. But as of yet, I've not found any feature in there that I specifically need. I'll give you a couple of top tips with GarageBand. You will 95% of the time want to increase the master sound level to ensure that it's listenable while your podcast is listenable out in public, especially for anyone that rides underground or tube trains or you know any sort of metro line in the States as well, because the rattling carriages will definitely drown out Mr. Roan's beautiful voice. and if you're going to do that, make sure, I think it's in the preferences pane. There is a master control override checkbox kind of thing, so just hunt for that as well. You have to disable that or it won't let you change it. Also make sure that this is something else that for anybody that noticed in the first episode or two, the voice of God. If you select the podcasting preset, it will give you a male and a female voice track presets, they have an echo to them. Turn off presets completely. Don't know why.
And that's how we got the voice of God.
Yes. I don't know why Apple decided to do that. You'd think that their podcasting presets would just be clean and pure and simple. Maybe a little bit of adjustment to make you sound a bit better, but no. They put you in
so,
a church.
So, question for you. So, you're using... And for our American listeners, I'll translate. GarageBand is actually GarageBand. So how do you, is there a way to like match up the waveforms so that, you know, so in GarageBand that's easy, or do you kind of have to manually do that? My point is, you're taking these two double-ended recordings where you have one voice on each, and you have to kind of match them up almost perfectly in order for it to be, you know, right and sound like the conversation that we actually had. How do you do that?
It's mainly well, by I have a way that I sometimes will do it. If it's a difficult recording that requires editing, because I record it in the Skype call recorder, I have a completed file of our conversation, which has the full waveform. Because gotcha. If I'm bringing in two separate tracks, it's only got half of the waveform each. So if, for example, I had a third track with the full waveform from the Skype recorder, I could match up the way that they look. And that's quite fiddly, but it's a way to do it if you're doing some serious editing on it. Now, GarageBand will make a waveform out of the file, so a visual, so you'll be able to visually see where someone's talking and someone's not. And if you're just matching the tracks up, most of the time you can just get it by ear.
Noted.
Once you've got it in place, once you've actually got the track in place, lock it in place, and then any editing that you do, just make sure that both tracks are selected so you've taken out the pieces from both. It can be a bit fiddly. Sometimes if you're using Skype, if you've been on Skype for a while and there's a bit of lag, that can make a bit of an issue, and you might need to chop out pieces from one or the other. Let me try and explain that a little bit better. Because of the lag in Skype, sometimes I will hear Pat differently to how it's being recorded. So it would sound like we were talking over each other if I didn't do any editing to it. So because of the lag, it can just sound a bit peculiar. It's difficult to explain, but you understand what I mean. If you've been recording for a couple of hours, towards the end there will start to be a bit of lag. So just being mindful of that.
Okay. All right. So now you've got this finished recording. You've got this file. You want to share it with the world. You want to get it on the iTunes store for people to subscribe to your podcast, that sort of thing. How briefly do you think we can go over those steps as we're running at about 18 minutes now?
Very quickly. Basically, you want to, in the podcast page of the iTunes store, you can say submit a podcast. You can chuck your feed in there. I'd suggest to put your feed through Feedburner. I use Libsyn as my hosting service. They work great for me. The good thing about Libsyn is they don't charge you for how many downloads you're getting or how much bandwidth you're using. You get charged for the amount of data storage you get with them.
Now, one thing that's interesting is I've noticed a lot of... It seems like every time I download a podcast, I'm looking at a Libsyn URL. I mean, not just ours, but like others as well. Yeah. So it must be fairly popular for
They've been around for a long time, and their benefit is because it doesn't matter how popular you are, they won't charge you any more for that.
That's nice. Okay.
What I would always suggest is submit a test iTunes feed first. Make sure it has an audio file embedded in it, and make it about 30 seconds to a minute long, because Apple can reject feeds if it feels it's an empty feed. So maybe just chuck a bit of sort of PodSafe music in there and just give it a little test and stuff and chuck that in. It usually takes about 24 to 48 hours for a feed to be approved. Once that's done, delete it from your hosted page server or whatever. There are many different options other than Libsyn. A lot of people host them themselves. Libsyn is just what I choose to use.
And you just said something interesting that I think really needs to be covered quickly, which is PodSafe music.
Yes.
Basically, you know, there are copyrights on music, and so you need to use music that is free from license and copyright, or at least licensed and copyrighted in such a way that allows you to use it for a podcast. Otherwise, you know, Apple will reject it, and record company lawyers will come and sue your pants off.
Yeah, it's more the record company, really, because Apple, they only listen to your first episode.
Oh, okay, all right.
I'll give you at least one more top tip. Maybe we can cover the rest in another episode.
Yeah.
Make sure that your metadata is good. And that's another reason to try and use a hosted service like Libsyn, because they will give you all the fields to fill out. Make sure you've got tags in there. It's another reason to submit your iTunes feed early as well, so you can see if there's any problems in your metadata. Reason I would say this is Apple will only feature podcasts that have got full data, like tags, search keywords, website addresses, everything. They will only feature a podcast that has that information. So if you want to get on the new and noteworthy page, is the only way to do it.
Wow. Okay. Very interesting. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's almost like it's. I mean, it sounds like the you know, version 1.0 of their you know, of their
App Store.
Yeah. Process, basically, you know, because, you know, hey, we're gonna listen to this, and we're gonna, if you want to be on here, you've got to dot all the I's and cross all the T's, because we could reject you for any reason we feel like.
Yep.
And you'll have to go through all this work again,
because if you're not on the iTunes podcast store, then you might as well not have a podcast, because it's the only place people go to download them, really. You know,
yeah.
there isn't really, there are still podcast directories, but nobody, you know,
nobody uses them. Yeah.
I would also say go through FeedBurner. They give you really good statistics. It's free. It's a Google product. Put your feed through there. But just be mindful of the fact that your FeedBurner feed will have to be pinged before it will show up, or it's a half-hour delay. There are delays across the board for RSS. So,
right.
Again, it's just something to look into.
Yeah, because I've noticed that, you know, when enough is available in the RSS feed, it hasn't necessarily... is not on iTunes.
iTunes updates once every 24 hours.
Right.
So it's even worse. They will only do an update every 24 hours. However, if somebody is subscribed to the feed, it will just start downloading it like an RSS client. So if there's a new episode, it disregards what's in the iTunes store. It just looks at the RSS feed when you're in iTunes. So if you subscribe to a podcast, we release an episode, you'll get it as soon as it's released. But it may not show on the iTunes Music Store until the next day, if you've missed a 24-hour refresh time. You can manually ping your podcast. If you just search ping iTunes, you'll see a link that you can select, and it will manually ping your page. So keep the email that Apple send you. When your podcast is approved, because it has your podcast ID number in there. There is a lot to this. Eventually, I am going to write something about this.
I think this would... I know it would be helpful to a lot of people, and because, I mean, even to me, before we started doing this, and even now that we are doing it, there's a lot of kind of magic to it that I don't know, and I'm glad I don't have to know.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I have someone, you know, who is smart and you know, and who does this. Right?
Are you implying someone else?
Well, no, that's you.
Oh, thank you.
That's you, mate. You know, I mean, seriously, I there's no way I could do this without you, because at least not nearly as easily. It would have taken a lot of the kind of fits and starts and tips that you've given here. So I appreciate it. I know there are folks out there that really appreciate it, and I think this will end up generating a lot of questions too. So
yeah, please send us in questions. You can
Twitter is probably just as easy as anything for me, at the very least as a starting point. Patrick Rohn on Twitter, PatrickRhone. Minimal Mac, all lowercase, all one string. On Twitter, you are?
iMike. It's just IMYKE.
Yes.
Just because I want to make it difficult for you to find me.
So yeah, if it has anything to do with how to get your podcast up in iTunes, or you know, making it, editing it in GarageBand, or for you Brits, GarageBand.
Nice try.
Thank you. Oh yeah. Actually, I should have called in my little girl, because she can say it perfectly.
I'm sure she can. She's been taught proper English.
She has been taught proper English. It's quite scary. In any case, the bottom line is, thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate you sharing kind of how the sausage is made.
Thank you.
And I hope other people benefit from it.
Me too.
And I'll talk to you later, all right?
We'll do, buddy.
All right, bye.
Bye.